So we've taken a look at the contents of the book of Job, and we've taken a look at the background to wisdom literature generally. What we need to do this time is to focus on what are the messages that come through in the book of Job. What's the wisdom that this biblical wisdom literature is trying to convey? What is it that we ought to learn through this process of traveling with Job through sufferings? What are some of the key ideas that come out? Want to call your attention again to the larger structure of the book of Job, that there's an opening setting, mostly in prose, in which Job's conditions of life, his wealth, his righteousness are expressed, and along with that, the dialogue in heaven of the observers of our human race, God and the angels, and also Satan, and Satan's challenge that while God thinks Job is great, and Job is in fact great, why Job is great and what Job does is specifically because God gives him toys and blessings. Take these away, and Job will curse God. God does not think that's the answer, and God allows Satan to take away Job's toys in order to more fully assess whether his perspectives, Satan's perspectives, are right. Out of that comes the dialogues, the first dramatic dialogue between Job and his three friends in which they accuse him of secret sins, which are now being punished by a righteous God, that this world is cause and effect, and good brings blessing, bad brings punishment. The second dramatic dialogue in which Elihu shows up, a younger character, a younger friend, who chastises Job's friends for not having fully addressed the situation and chastises Job for not being submissive enough, and then talks about a larger, more complex world in which good and evil both exist, not because the Creator intended it that way, but simply because that's the world in which we live and how are we going to learn to live in that world. And then the third dramatic dialogue in which God speaks from the storm clouds and expresses God's power over all things, and then dialogues briefly with Job about how big do you think you really are. And then the conclusion, the final setting in which restoration is given to Job and all of his possessions multiplied again, and Job's three friends are chastised and dealt with, and there's kind of peace on earth. But the really critical issue is this. Why does, in fact, Job suffer? And the responses given in the book are more than one. There are a number of different responses to Job's situation that come from different voices. And I've suggested, as you can see in the chart there, that there are a number of different dramatic persons who speak out of the context of the whole of the dramatic dialogues and the narration in order to address and assess the possible answers that might be given. For instance, there's the narrator up front who clearly indicates that Satan brings the specific hurts that Job experiences. Why does Satan do this? Because this is a spiritual test to see whether Job serves God for the toys that he gets or because it is essential to his character. What's the outcome expected? That Job either will show faithfulness to God or will curse God and turn away from God, one or the other. So where does it come from? Where does the evil come from? It comes from Satan. Why does the evil come? As a spiritual test. Toward what end? How will Job respond? Hopefully to show faithfulness, but possibly not, according to Satan. The second dramatic person who enters the scene very briefly is Job's wife. All is taken away from Job except for his wife and his life. And his life is severely compromised by sickness and disease, and his wife is severely antagonistic to him, saying that all your goodness, all your righteousness, all your good deeds, all your presumed worship of God leads to nothing. Obviously, your God isn't God. You ought to do something else. There's another power that's arrived on the scene. Somehow, you have gotten the thing wrong, and you've got to learn your lesson and follow the next great power and get back what we had before. Where does this come from? The the evil that happens from this new power that arrives on the scene. Call him Satan, call him the evil one, call him the bigger power, call him whatever you want. Why has it happened? Because the God Job used to serve isn't powerful enough. Another God, another sheriff has arrived in town, and you better get on the side of that. Another gang has taken over. Go for the new gang. Toward what end is this all happening to Job? Because he's still trying to serve the old God who's shown to be powerless. Get rid of that God and turn to the new power, and then things will turn around for you in your life. That's the second major answer given to why Job suffers. Then come the three friends, and this dominates the scene, and in effect, this becomes the key idea behind why we think Job suffers. This is the typical religious response, not just in Christianity, but throughout the religions of the world. If things are happening badly or wrongly, obviously there's a power out there we need to appease, we need to repent to. You can see this in the variety of religious expressions throughout the history of humankind. The three friends put it in a context of biblical religion. Obviously, there's a creator God. There's a great God who's in charge of all things. This God is always in control, if Job receives blessings, then this God is pleased with Job, and therefore it's an expression that Job has done righteous things. If Job is experiencing ill or evil, it means that the Creator God is not pleased with Job, and that means that Job has done something wrong. So the whole idea is, in this rigid understanding of religion, God's in control, good happens to those who do right, bad happens to those who do evil, and what Job needs to do is repent. He needs to get rid of whatever it is that he's done wrong, make atonement for it, make sacrifice for it, get on with life, get on the good side of God once again, and start living a righteous life, because obviously he hasn't been. Job is the fourth voice in all of these things, and he stands with his friends in acknowledging that all good and ill in this life ultimately comes from God. God is the source of all life. God is the source of all things that happen. Job doesn't blame God per se, but he does acknowledge that nothing can happen apart from God's sovereign control over life. But why is it happening to him? Whereas the friends say, it's because you've sinned, Job himself says, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't done anything really bad. I haven't violated God's goodwill. I don't know why this is happening. And so the other question, toward what end are these sufferings happening to Job, is answered in exactly the same way. I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to learn from this. I honestly don't know what the lesson is all about, because I don't know why this is happening. And that's where the fifth voice enters, the voice of Elihu. Coming in chapter 32, he speaks a new word, expanding on these ideas of righteousness, the righteousness of God. Certainly all things come from God, because God is sovereign. But why do they come? Maybe the friends are right in that sometimes we receive evil as punishment because of our sinfulness. But that's not the only possibility, says Elihu. And here's where it gets more complex. We live in a broken world. We live in a world which is already affected by sin, or affected by sin. We live in a world which is already wrestling with its original goodness and the evil that has leached into it. So there are powers that swirl around us, and sometimes we respond positively to them, and sometimes we respond negatively. Sometimes we do what's right, and sometimes we do what's wrong. And through it all, in sort of this cacophony, this sense of noisiness, God has to shout, hey, wait a minute, I'm still here, I'm still in control. And so punishment, or rather evil, can be not merely punishment, can be God's megaphone, God's voice, trying again to catch our attention in a world in which we're wandering and running around aimlessly. So a new kind of idea enters through Elihu's reflections on these things, that certainly God punishes at times, but certainly God also brings guidance through some of these things, and certainly also these things call for us to surrender to God, to reaffirm our dependence upon God, even when we don't have the answers. Now that becomes more loudly stated or expressed in the sixth voice, the voice of God himself. There is no issue about where all of Job's suffering is coming from. God is sovereign. God is always in control. And so the object lessons that God gives are lessons about the reality of God's sovereignty. I am the one who created all things. I'm the one who knows all things. You don't know all things. But that is an affirmation that God is ultimately in control. So why does Job suffer? Well, there's a sense in which the statements or indications or ideas of Elihu are affirmed. Yes, it's to confirm your relationship with me. Are you God or are you human? My subject, my object of affection, but lesser than me. And the ultimate end toward which this suffering takes place is to bring about that surrender, which then is affirmed in the wrap-up, in the conclusion to the book, the seventh voice, again sort of reiterating some of these things. All things come ultimately from God. God remains sovereign. Evil, Satan, they're not co-powerful with God. They operate out of a context of permission, not out of a context of independence. Why do these things happen? Well, sometimes their punishment. The friends should be punished because they did wrong, and they were right in saying that punishment comes when you do things wrong. But that's not the only answer. That there's a sense in which Job has been chastised into a deeper awareness of the meaning of life and his place in it. Ultimately then, toward what end? To surrender anew, to surrender more fully, to retain a sense of creatureliness over against the Creator's sovereignty, to come into a deeper and more profound acknowledgement of our place in relationship with God. The message of Job is in several aspects. Ours is not an entirely mechanistic universe. There are spiritual powers that influence our daily lives. Not all pain and problems are the direct result of our sinfulness, as if you can say, if this, then this. That's not possible. Instead, the normal or natural human identity involves acknowledging and worshiping God. In this, Satan got it wrong. He said, it is not natural for humans to worship God. They only do it because of what they get out of it. They play with God in order to get God's toys. And Job proves that that's not the case. That the normal or natural human identity involves acknowledging and worshiping God, even when the toys are taken away. But the worship of God cannot be coerced. In other words, this is not a mechanistic universe in which God can force God's own self upon us. And so the great outcome of the book of Job, the wisdom of the book of Job is this. The fundamental challenge to human living is that of continuing to be our truest God-worshipping selves, even when the limited evidence of daily experience seems to speak to the contrary. In other words, do I see God in the room with me? Do I think God is only with me when things go my way? Do I worship God even though I can't see God? And the outcome is that even when we don't see God or feel God or experience ecstasy in worship celebrations, even in the down times, I will not turn from God. Even when God is silent, it is right for me, because I am a creature of God, to worship the Creator. Even if all the world conspires against me, I can do nothing but worship God. For this is what it means to be truly human, truly a response to our God. The book of Job gives us several options in terms of how to respond to pain and suffering, which we all experience in different ways and at different times. Option one, we can accuse God or others of doing bad things, and we can placate God. Job's friends, a kind of religious mechanism. There's a cause and effect in this world. If you're blessed, you've done right. If you're cursed, you've done wrong. Repent, get on the other side. This means that. It's very mechanistic. Option two, change gods. Who's in charge? Who's more powerful? If you can't get what you want from the God of the Bible, then go to a different God. Go to a different religion. Go to the powers of evil, because obviously the God of the Bible is not doing his thing for you, and you deserve something better, so go to a different power and get what you really deserve. Option three, give up in the face of the observed. Job's wife kind of does this, a sense of fatalism. You had it and you don't anymore. Go find it somewhere else. Who can tell? Option four, live with a kind of existential boldness. I don't know what's happening to me, but I won't give in. This I will remain true to, that I can be myself. Or option five, wrestle and worship. And this really is ultimately the profound message of the book of Job. In face of the other options for human existence, for human response to pain and suffering, here's really the proper or most profound, most biblical, most righteous, most godly response: to wrestle with evil, to wrestle with the Creator, but ultimately to fall down in worship. Ultimate to our human existence is the relationship between Creator and creature. That we are not God, that God remains God, that we are inextricably tied to God, and that our whole beings respond to God. It is the only norming value that endorses our truest human identity, no matter what happens. How will we live in the face of suffering? The book of Job has a very profound answer, and one which we need constantly to think about in our world, which struggles with evil and difficulty and sin and pain. I'd refer you to my book again to think about how these things may be explored further, Covenant Documents, Reading the Bible Again for the First Time.